Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I have that little intro just so that I can get into the groove, you see, because you got to get into the groove is what you got to do. And that's what we're here to do, is to get into the groove, and we're going to start jumping right into the science. Really? File? Something happened to our reverb. It's not as good as it used to be. I think that Van Halen song broke the reverb on the board. We go right into the science. No, I have to hit it. The science. Really, I was walking through a grocery store the other day. And I realize that what I'm doing there is I'm ripping off that song, She Blinded Me with Science. That's where I got that. I was subliminally ripping off that artist, and I didn't even know it. And right at this moment, I could not tell you who that artist is. That's kind of embarrassing. But neither can anyone else, because that was the definition of a one-hit wonder. She blinded me with science. Science! Science is how you do. All right, I'll just move on with the show. We have a new missing link. That's right, the Telegraph in London reports that a new missing link between ape-like ancestors and early humans has been identified. Now, note to the author at the Telegraph, you can't have a new missing link. You can only have a missing link. That's why it's called the missing link. Once it's found, then there's the link, and the link is no longer missing, okay? So there can't be a new missing link. That implies that you were making it up the last time. Don't you get that? And then the article goes on and talks about how this fossil was discovered in Africa 10 years ago, and after a decade of research, experts have confirmed that this fossil does, in fact, belong to a unique species, which slots into the human family tree between little upright apes like Lucy and Homo habilis. So they report on Lucy. Now, they say that Lucy is an upright ape, and that Lucy is somehow involved in the family tree of humans, even though, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Lucy the other missing link, maybe, that you guys made up? Because it was thoroughly debunked quite some time ago that Lucy stood upright, first of all. That was confirmed as a hoax to anyone who's actually paying attention. And then, anyway, I just Googled it real quick, and in 2015, they admitted that the bones were found miles apart, and there was a baboon bone in there, anyone who's actually paying attention knows that Lucy was either a juvenile baboon or chimpanzee pieced together from pieces of bone scattered all across the African plain there. But here's the thing. Most people are not paying attention. And they think that Lucy was an upright standing ape-like creature related to us in some way. Now they've got a new missing link, which is no longer missing, but it is still missing, you see, because it's all made up. They just make it all up. So the missing link is still missing. And it's not Lucy, and it's not Homo habilis. It's none of that stuff. The whole evolutionary calliope is creaking and teetering on the verge of collapse, at which point you know where they're going to go. Aliens! That's right. Oh, turn off the... It was the... All right. It was the aliens is what it was. All right. So there. We jump right into the news. And then, what's that now? Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science, my extremely attractive audio engineer, has come to the rescue. She never even heard that song.
It's in 82.
1982. She wasn't even born yet in 1982. Anyway, this is probably the most press Thomas Dolby has gotten since 1983, since his career came to a quick and rapid halt. All right, now I want to comment on the Black Hebrew Israelites. So now, I had never heard of the Black Hebrew Israelites before their encounter. Over at the, they were as a march in Washington. I believe they call it, what do they call that? They call that march the March for Well-Regulated Child Killing, I believe was. Oh, no, that's what I call it. The organizers call it the March for Life. But it is no longer the March for Life, because the alleged pro-life movement has moved to a position of merely regulating the murder of innocent people. Well, there were some Catholic kids there. You've all heard the story because, well, the media was pretty much obsessed with it all week. Why? Because it was related to the Donald Trump soap opera, because one of the kids happened to be wearing, excuse me, a Make America Great hat again. Anyway, did you see that Indian hippie dude who was beating his drum in the Catholic kid's face? From a certain angle, he looked just like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg! It's like she came back from the dead. Oh, no, wait, she's not dead. Or at least we're not saying that out loud yet. I haven't heard from her, by the way, though. Haven't heard about her. Haven't heard from her. As a matter of fact, I'm just now noticing that there is a near total media blackout, radio silence, regarding anything having anything to do with anything at all to do with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that makes me suspicious. So color me suspicious. But I thought that, anyway, that Indian hippie dude, the guy who said he was a Vietnam era veteran, do you get that? That means he was in the military for some period of time during the Vietnam conflict. But the implication is that he crawled through the Vietnamese jungle with a knife in his mouth, killed the enemy with his bare hands. That was the implication until it turned out that he was lying.
He was lying that too.
Yeah, he was lying about being a Vietnam. Well, he may have been in the army at some point. That's all we know. But he was lying when he said he was a Vietnam veteran, which is how he said it initially. And then he said a Vietnam era veteran. Anyway, all right. So I'm telling you, when I first saw the video, I thought that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg banging a drum in front of that poor Catholic kid's face. Anyway, and I don't want to comment too much on the Catholic kid because he's just a kid. I don't really know what happened there, and I really don't care. But what I am interested in is the Black Hebrew Israelites. First of all, note to the Black Hebrew Israelites, don't be redundant about your lineage. You don't have to say you're both a Hebrew and an Israelite. A Hebrew is an Israelite. An Israelite is a Hebrew. You could drop one of those. And because you say it twice, it makes you sound ignorant. Or, I mean, don't beat me up on this, but is it possible that it just reveals your own insecurity about your Hebrew Israelite heritage? Maybe you're a bit insecure about the fact that genetic testing has proven that none of you are Hebrew, none of you are Israelites. You're not Hebrew, and you're not Israelites, for that matter. But you are black, so you got that right. And you're racists, and you're stupid, and you're abusive to women and children, and you're broke, and you're on welfare. Yes, the Black Hebrew Israelites is a fraudulent cult that has more in common with the Mormon cult than anything having to do with anything to do with Hebrews. Anyway, these Black Hebrew Israelites, they're another remnant of the 1960s social convulsions induced by drug use. They're socialists, they're polygamists, and they're welfare cases who've basically perpetuated their continued existence as a cult through government subsidies. Welfare from both Israel, they're not even Hebrews, and the Israeli government gives them welfare over there in Israel. They have a kibbutz or something. They're vegans, by the way. So they have a kibbutz over there where they grow meat-free vegan fare. But it's, what's that?
Meat-free vegan.
Yes, it's meat-free. Isn't that part of veganism?
Isn't that redundant?
Well, they're black Hebrew Israelites. So meat-free vegan. Yeah, yeah, that's it. So the Israeli government not only tolerates them, but gives them some sort of welfare on their kibbutz over there, which the Israeli government subsidizes, because otherwise these people would go broke because they're socialists and they're stupid. I already said that. And they also get welfare here in the United States, not just the regular welfare that we all see people partaking of on a daily basis, but they have special welfare just for their cult, written into law by the Congress. Special cult welfare for the black Hebrew Israelites. It's just bizarre. Anyway, that's all the press they're going to get from here. That's it. We're done with them. All right. Let's see. Where was I going to go? Oh, as far as the march for well-regulated child killing, organized by National Right to Life and the Emily's List. You know what? I'll get to that later because I have some quotes from the leadership of the pro-life industry. It's an industry, you see. It's no longer a movement to stop the murder of innocent people. That's what it started as. Now it's an industry so that leaders can build good fundraising organizations and then retire comfortably while not one innocent child is saved by them. That's what it's become. But we'll get back to that because I have some other things that I want to get to. I tell you, since I stopped smoking, I've got throat and nose issues. Now, I thought that would help with the throat and the nose issues, but I think that my throat and nose are now settling back down to normal sensitivity levels. And so I sniffle more and I need to clear my throat more. I have a frog in my throat. I went to the doctor and I went to National Jewish, right? Which is a top-notch, world-class pulmonary specialist location. And I had all the tests. So I don't have cancer. I don't have COPD. I don't have any major issues, so don't worry. But I cough and I sniffle and I hack more than I used to back when I smoked. So I walked out of a store the other day, and this fella just happened to be lighting up a cigarette. And I'm sure it was unintentional because he let out a great big puff of really thick cigarette smoke just as I passed right past him, and I had to walk right through it. And I almost said thank you to the guy. Because it was, anyway, most people would not consider that a pleasant experience unless you're a former smoker who was forced to quit smoking through the corporal punishment of God, which is where I'm at with all that. So anyways, If I hack and sniffle through the show, you just keep in mind that I am recovering. I am a recovering nicotine addict. All right. Now, this is not... Oh, okay. So now let's go. Speaking of smoking, we'll go to the Marijuana Never Hurt Anyone file, where 29-year-old Marco Moreno... he was attending, this is in Texas. He was at a church during a service. It was a home church. And Kingdom Acts Ministries was having a prayer meeting and a Bible study. And 29-year-old Marco Moreno attended. It was around 7 p.m. And at some point during the service, Moreno got up from his seat and began attacking everyone else there with a knife. 61-year-old Frank Castillo was killed. He was killed by Marco Moreno. He wasn't killed in a knife attack. He wasn't killed by a knife attack. He was killed by Marco Moreno. He didn't die in a knife attack. He was killed by Marco Moreno. 61-year-old Frank Castillo was killed after being stabbed in the neck. Four people in total were attacked. Moreno was charged with murder and 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, as you can well imagine. Now, the court found out that Moreno had an alcohol and drug-related history with police. Kind of leave that vague, but we all know what that means. Mental health professionals had found that Moreno was insane at the time of the attack, even though Moreno's mother confirmed that he was a good boy, but he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Moreno started to have a change in behavior, says his mom, after high school. Moreno was diagnosed with cannabis dependence with unspecified cannabis-induced disorder, UCD, unspecified cannabis-induced disorder, UCID. That must be a new one there. Unspecified cannabis-induced disorder. So this pothead went crazy at a Bible study and killed a guy and cut up 3 other people. And a Texas jury just found him not guilty by reason of insanity. Wow. Not guilty by reason of insanity. He stabbed and killed a 61-year-old man.
In Texas?
In Texas, yes. Everybody thinks that Texas is the last bastion of hope. That's what I had hoped. But it turns out, no. So that goes into the marijuana never hurt anyone file, except for the 61-year-old Frank Castillo, who was murdered, and the other 3 people who were cut up by Marco Moreno and his unspecified cannabis-induced disorder. There we go. That will be kept on file in the injustice file until the day when Marco Moreno goes to judgment before the living God. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Those guys, you think those guys were smoking pot? Yeah.
You don't have to go to Bangkok anymore.
Yes, that's true. You don't have to go to Bangkok anymore. So there you have that. Now let's go. We go from a knife attack. Let's move on. Now we go to an axe attack. Yes, indeed. Evie Amati. Let's see here. Evie, I guess that's Evie. Evie Amati is his name. His legal team claims that his sex change operation left him in immense pain and fueled his desire to kill strangers. Now, through the article, they call him her, but I'm calling him. Just to be clear, this is a man putting on an act as a woman. And, what happened is, Amati was furious after a bad Tinder date with a woman. Hold on a second. Let's try to get this straight because this gets confusing. Evie Amati was born a man and then had a sex change to become a woman and then had a bad Tinder date with a woman. So it seems like he could have just cut out the middleman and saved an awful lot of time. But hey, who are we to judge? We can't judge, right? No. Well, how about can we judge him for this? He hit a man in the face with an axe for no reason. He just walked into a 7-Eleven with an axe, approached a man at the cash register, began talking with him, and then suddenly struck him in the face with the axe. And if the man hadn't seen it coming and moved, that he would have split the guy's head right in half and killed the man. And this was all caught on a closed-circuit television, a security camera there. Amadi, the enraged tranny, also struck the shop owner with the axe in his rampage. Okay, are we allowed to judge for that? Now, I know we're not allowed to judge him for saying he's a girl and or going out with women on Tinder, which that right there I have a problem with. If you have Tinder on your phone, I have a problem with you. Well, I should just say I recognize a problem in you if you have Tinder on your phone. That's all. So anyway, this all took place in Australia. I didn't know they had 7-Elevens in Australia, but I knew they had trannies. Anyway, this tranny's been sentenced for hitting a man in the head with an axe, okay? Splitting his face, slicing the man's face in half. He's been sentenced to 4.5 years, which means he could be out in less than 3 years for hitting a man in the face with an axe. That's just unbelievable. And you wonder, why is there an epidemic of violent crime all over the world? It's because of this, the justice system. Well, anyway, need I say any more? That's it right there. Let's go from the axe-wielding trannies in a rage on Tinder. We'll go to Israel and Syria, where the actual Hebrews confirmed last week that they had attacked Iranian military targets in Syria in a daylight raid near Damascus International Airport. What makes this story interesting is that Israel, the let's call them the Hebrew Israelis, they typically do not take credit for bombing anything, ever. They just leave, you know, it's like that old saying, some things are just better left unsolved, as far as Israeli intelligence is concerned. But they decided that they would take credit for this because now they want the Iranians to know that, that they're serious and then that things have escalated. A statement was issued hours after the Israeli missile defenses intercepted an incoming missile over the Golan Heights in the wake of the airport raid. So the Iranian forces in Syria decided to shoot a missile back at the Israelis. And so the Israelis said, not only did we bomb your assets there in Damascus, we also knocked that missile down that you shot at us. And if you do it again, we're going to bomb you again. And our missiles will hit you, and your missiles will not hit us. Israel said, quote, we have started striking Iranian Quds targets in Syrian territory. We warn the Syrian armed forces against attempting to harm Israeli forces or territory. The Syrian military, according to the Associated Press, said that Israel carried out intensive airstrikes with successive waves of guided missiles shortly after 1 a.m., but they claim that the Syrian air defenses destroyed most of the missiles before they reached their targets, which was completely untrue. let's see here. The Israelis initially declined to comment, though they did say that a rocket fired at the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights was intercepted. So this shows the bias of the Associated Press. They still call the Golan Heights the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. And those of you who are not familiar with history may not know that before Israel occupied the Golan Heights, the Syrians occupied the Golan Heights. And they launched missiles and rockets daily at all the kibbutzim down there in the valley. If you've ever been to Israel, it's something to see, to go to the Golan Heights and look down on the Galilee. It's amazing. And to imagine that the Israelis allowed, that the world actually allowed the Syrians to occupy that territory and just lob rockets at innocent farmers, it's shocking to think about. But the Israelis, once they kicked the Syrians out, not one rocket has fallen on a kibbutz from the Syrians since that time. So that kind of tells you who are the reasonable civilized people and who are the murderous maniacs in this conflict. Let's see. Do we have anything else? Benjamin Netanyahu says, we have a defined policy to harm Iranian entrenchment in Syria and to harm anyone who tries to harm us. Okay, Bibi, here's the problem. This is why you're going to lose, Bibi, is because you have a policy to harm. You don't have a policy to harm. You have a policy to kill and destroy anyone who tries to kill us. You don't want to just harm them, Bibi. Don't be so nice. Say that, look, these people want to kill us. The Iranians have said, since they founded their Islamic State, the original Islamic State, in 1979, they have clearly stated that is that their goal is the destruction of Israel. So your goal, Bibi, cannot be to harm them. It must be to kill and destroy Iran by whatever means you find convenient and available. They just try to harm. Anyway, so what you're doing, Bibi, by saying you want to harm is you're basically committing your country to another never-ending war, right? When the rulers and their people become so corrupt as to lose the confidence of the rightness of their actions, which is what's happened in Israel, and it's happening here in America, our leadership has become so corrupt and deviant and defiled and wicked and evil that they've lost the confidence that they are right or that they can be right. And so that's why there is these never-ending wars. It's not because of the military-industrial complex and the money, although that has something to do with it, I'm sure. It's more a loss of confidence. And a country that murders its children and defiles and homosexualizes the children that they don't kill eventually becomes unmoored from reality, and they lose the confidence to execute judgment and to declare that we will kill and destroy anyone who tries to kill us, because somewhere in the back of our collective minds, we have a guilt complex about all the killing we're doing. And the Israelis are an outpost of us in the Middle East. And they're just like us in that they murder their children and they homosexualize the ones they haven't murdered. And they defile the ones that they can get their hands on. And so eventually you have this collective guilt complex that means you're no longer able to declare yourself the righteous leader and the righteous crusader for justice and good and all of that. Can't do that anymore. All right, now we go to the Express, which is some sort of rag out of England. They talking about the fears of World War III around this issue of Israel now openly striking Iran. The Express reports that World War III fears have been sparked after Israel hit the Syrian capital of Damascus. It was an open assault on Iran's presence there. Iran issued a message warning that it is ready to confront and destroy Israel. They're not afraid to say it. And then the Express interviews a former Pentagon official, Michael Maloof. I have no idea who this guy is, but I'm assuming he's an Obama guy. That's what I'm assuming. He warned this former Pentagon official. What does that mean? What? Maybe he was in charge of polishing the hubcaps on the vehicles there at the Pentagon. I have no idea who this guy is, Michael Maloof. For all I know, he was in charge of keeping track of the tire pressure in the vehicles. Anyway, he says that the situation is getting quickly out of hand due to intensified Israeli attacks. Maloof made his comments in an interview to RT America. that's Russia TV. Here we have it. Former Barry Ho official colluding with Russian TV right there in front of everybody. Maloof says, quote, you've got to keep in mind that the alleged Iranian attack was in response to a prior Israeli attack. Basically, the Israelis started the whole thing. He actually said that to the Russians. And of course, the Russians published that because, well, the Russians are the Russians. And the Russians are with the Iranians. Anyway, so Maloof says, who cares what Maloof says? I think that the Iranians started it in 1979 by establishing the Islamic State, is what they did, and declaring that they were going to kill and destroy and wipe Israel off the face of the earth. So don't tell me that the Israelis started it. Everybody knows that it was the fanatical murderers in Tehran who started it. And they started it quite some time ago, and it's about time someone figures out how to finish it. Level up. I don't feel I have the right energy level. I don't know what's going on, but I just don't feel it today. Some days you feel it, some days you're just not feeling it. I'm not feeling it, but that helped a lot. But now I have to talk more about these insane Muslims, okay? So you wonder, so I just criticized the Israeli government for murdering their children and being just deviant perverts and all of that. But it's the Muslims who are the problem as far as world peace and national security. They're the more existential, physical threat they're not. So I take all of that back. The Muslims have not killed nearly as many Jews as the Jews have by murdering their children. And they haven't killed nearly as many Americans as Americans have by murdering our own children. And building a culture in which the children are taught that they evolve by accident from nothing and they're going nowhere, that's led to more children killing themselves than the Muslims have ever killed. Okay? But now I'm going to criticize the Muslims, okay? I got an imam here from Pakistan. Breitbart reports that this imam migrated to Germany, right? And there... His father was an imam, his grandfather was an imam, and he was trained from the age of 8 to become an imam, right? So he goes to Greece, where he planned to start his own mosque, but he met some Christians there, and he says it was the charity of a Christian couple in Greece that began his journey to conversion from a Muslim imam to a Christian. Well, now that he is converted to Christianity, he says, listen to this. He says, I persecuted and oppressed Christians myself. But then he became a Christian. He moved back to Pakistan. He founded an underground church, which was eventually discovered by the Muslims. So what did they do? They beat him half to death. They almost killed him. They left him for dead. And he was beaten by whom? By members of his own family and friends, along with others in the town where he had grown up. For converting from one religion to another, his own family tried to kill him. And they're still trying to kill him. He had to flee Pakistan. He came to Germany to seek asylum. But in Germany, he's still under threat from Muslims who want to kill him for converting to Christianity. He was recently stabbed by two men who spoke Urdu, the language there in Pakistan. Anyway, he says members of his own family still have an open-issued fatwa, a death threat against him. This is the real religion file, real religion. I know people, some people say that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. And that's true. Christianity is a relationship with the living God, with his son, Jesus Christ. But it is a religion. Because Paul says that some people have a form of religion but deny its power. So we don't have to be anti-religion. We don't have to act like Christianity isn't a religion. It is a religion. It involves the worship of the true and living God, and that's a religion. And this is the real thing.
This is great news.
Yeah, this guy's amazing.
He's like a Paul.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be to grow up Catholic and someone asks you, what's your religion? And you say, well, I'm a Christian. Or that's what you have stamped on your dog tag when you go into the military, whatever. But to but to convert from where like your family is going to kill you, mm-hmm. to convert to Christianity, this guy's the real deal.
Yeah.
This guy's a real Christian. Anyway, Breitbart goes on to report that Christians are being persecuted around the world, as we know. Christian charity Open Doors recently released a report that about 4,000 Christians were murdered last year because they were Christians. And a total of 245 million Christians across the earth now face persecution. And as many as 40,000 Christians in Germany were under threat of persecution. Most of them are Islamic converts. And so if your religion teaches you that if you quit, you're to be beaten or killed, you should double check that religion. Just circle back around and try to figure out if that's... Because that's not normal for... Now, if it teaches you that if you quit, you're going to suffer spiritual damage and you're going to burn in hell for all of eternity, well, then that might be the real thing. But we're not going to beat you up or kill you or burn your house down. Okay? All right. Now, meanwhile, over in the Philippines, the Philippines may as well become a Muslim majority nation now. They may as well institute Sharia law, because what's happened is the Islamists. Well, let's just go back in time a little bit. Abu Sayyaf and Maute, I don't know how you. These were two Islamic groups in the Philippines over the last 30 years, 50 years, who have been fighting and bombing and killing innocent people. And if you remember back in 2017, they occupied a city called Marawi for 5 months and murdered the Christians and took the women as captives. And Islamists claim that in the 1970s, they were attacked by Christians. They call them land-grabbing Christian vigilantes armed by the government. And they claim that these Christians cut off the ears of murdered Muslims as trophies. That's what the Muslims claim happened in the 1970s. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds like it probably is true. Is that the Filipino government back in the 1970s decided they wanted to get rid of all the Muslims. Why? Well, because they were paying attention to how things go. And if you allow the Muslims to establish a community in your nation where they enforce their own Sharia code, well, eventually they're going to start bombing and killing, and they're going to try and take over the whole country. But because that's what happens everywhere where Muslims are allowed to gain any sort of entrenchment. Well, now, the Muslim majority region of the Philippines has been allowed to vote on self-determination. The Filipino government, in an attempt at peace, has allowed the Muslims to take over a certain portion of their nation. 4 million people in the Muslim areas of southern Mindanao Island have voted. There's been fighting there for about 50 years. They say it's claimed about 100,000 lives. So the Filipino government over there has decided to let the moderate Muslims vote. Well, I'm sorry. I don't think there's a such thing as a moderate Muslim. if you want to establish your own religious caliphate, and you say you don't want to cut anyone's head off, that's okay. Just wanting to form the caliphate is you're not moderate. And I don't think we should allow Muslims to live in America. That's all. I know it sounds terrible, right? I'm a horrible person. But I just don't think we should allow them to live here. I think they should be asked to leave and made to leave. Because, well, that's just how I feel, okay? There's another bombing in Syria this past week where a blast targeted the U.S.-led coalition and U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters. Fortunately, no Americans were killed. But the attacks continue. It was the second bombing aimed at the U.S. forces in Syria in less than a week. And you didn't hear much about it because all anybody talked about was the Ruth Bader Ginsburg impression of the Indian alleged army veteran banging the drum in the Catholic kid's face. That's all you heard about. You didn't hear that ISIS is resurgent. Anyway, but was there something hold on a second. I lost my place. Let me find my notes here. Have to go back. Bear with me one moment, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I was talking about the Muslims and then Syria. And then, before I forget, I have to now get to, because we've been talking about government, governing officials, and I've imparted to you the fact that Islam is not just a religion, it's also a socialist governing model. They want a socialist Islamic government with Sharia law, and that's not what we want here in America. But we do want something different. Something has got to change. And the thing that got my attention this week, ladies and gentlemen, was Denver, Colorado. The governing officials in Denver, Colorado have declared, now the coming week in Denver is going to be cold. How do we know it's going to be cold? Because it's January and it's Denver. And you can talk all you want about global warming, but it's going to be cold. And it's going to be most cold right in the morning at the crack of dawn when you go out to get in your car to drive to work. And so the Denver Police Department has been forced by the governing officials to declare this coming week Puffer Week. It is Puffer Week in Denver. And this week, the police are asked to publicly express the failure of the government to control crime by issuing tickets and fines to average civilized people preparing to drive in freezing temperatures by warming up their unattended cars. They call it puffing, and it's against the law. So in Denver, they have basically passed a law against being a civilized human being and warming up your car because the government cannot control the car thieves. So instead of controlling car thefts and making it so that people will not steal cars, they're forcing people to freeze on their way to work. And they're forcing people to do damage to their vehicle by not allowing it to warm up properly in freezing temperatures. And I think the entire government of Denver should be impeached and removed because of such a blatant and obvious failure to allow people to live as civilized human beings. There. So I've made my declaration against. And it's a similar situation across the country. Green Bay, Wisconsin, you can't warm up your car. I think we should be able to warm up our car. And so here's what I suggest to the governing officials there in Denver. Pass an ordinance in Denver that says if you steal a car and you are convicted, you will be beaten with a rod and until the flesh from the middle of your back to the back of your knees until all that skin is gone and there's nothing but blood. And then you will have to pay you will have to pay the person you stole the car from some sum of money. Okay? And then if you steal a car again, If you steal a car again and you're convicted, you will be put to death. And then there would be one of those cases, one, maybe. And then car theft would virtually, it would virtually end. And we could all warm up our cars and behave once again like civilized people. Got time for no more of that, boys. We got to come back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you. I wanted to get to running out of time here. Have you heard about smart homes? Smart homes. This is where you can control your thermostat, right? Your garage door, all that with a voice command or your phone, right? You can control your TV, your appliances, your door locks, your lights, right? Well, there's a report in the New York Times that these companies, Google Home, Amazon Echo, and Nest, and all that stuff, these companies are bringing these items to market without the proper security measures, and that your house could be hacked, right? And so the New York Times chastises the private market for trying to meet the demand of the consumer. They want to be able to control their lights with their smartphone. And well, here's the thing. So they say criminals rob banks because that's where the money is, says a senior research director at an advisory firm that makes its living off the crime epidemic. And he says the same type of criminals will commit cyber crimes because that's where the opportunity is. And see, the thing is he's incorrect. That's bank robbers do not rob banks because that's where the money is, even though that's a cute line that a bank robber made quite some time ago. Criminals rob banks because the risk-reward analysis is favorable to them, right? That's they look at the risk and the reward. That at the very worst, if they get caught, they'll go to jail for a while. So why not try to rob a bank? You might get away with it and get to keep the money. So it's the risk-reward analysis. It's that algorithm or that that needs to be changed, right? Uh-huh. And you know, thieves and cyber criminals, they're the same as bank robbers. They do a risk-reward analysis, and then they commit their crimes because they figure the risk isn't that high. So instead of chastising Amazon and Google and all these other companies for not building in massive amounts of security that cost billions of dollars, the government should just make it so that people are terrified to steal anyone's identity by punishing anyone who does it very severely. Go rewind to the cane and the flesh between the middle of your back and the back of your knees. That's it. Instead of all this security, the government should make it so that people won't do it. That's all. So all of this, every time you hear an ad on the radio for identity theft protection, now I want you to remember that your government has failed you. That should be, and there's a commercial like that. There's all these different, smart, Simply Safe Security. Come and wire your house up for security. What that means is your government has failed in its most fundamental responsibility to strike fear and terror into the hearts of anyone who would harm an innocent civilian. So there. Now, next time you hear a Simply Safe commercial or an identity theft commercial, I want you to think of that. My government has failed. All right. Meanwhile, the pro-life industry lied to everyone this week about how great things are going. They interviewed all the top pro-life industry fundraisers. Marjorie Dannenfelser from the Susan B. Anthony fundraising list says, quote, the strength of the pro-life movement are all over the place. This is the strongest pro-life Senate, the most pro-life Senate we have ever had in American history. Maybe it wasn't needed at one point, but now it is needed and we have it. She said, unquote, I'm sorry, unquote, she said, as she lied to the face of everyone who actually cares about the murder of innocent people. First of all, it can't be the most pro-life Senate in history because there was a time when the Senate wouldn't allow the murder of innocent children. So anyway, Marjorie, I understand your belief that this is the most pro-life Senate in history, but not one abortion will be stopped by this Senate, okay? Not one, not even one. Dannenfelser admitted that she is disappointed that the Republicans did not hold the House because they've never stopped a single abortion either. So I'm not sure why she was upset about that. But she does think that a Democratic House will be a good fundraising foil. That's what Marjorie Dannenfelser believes right in the bottom of her greedy little heart is what, yes. Let's see here. Listen to who do I have here? Dannenfelser. Listen to how cold and calculating Marjorie Dannenfelser's black little heart has become as she's turned into nothing but a fundraising machine. That's all she does is raise money and spend it. She says, quote, day one of Nancy Pelosi's leadership, the first bill out, and with the contrast with the first week of President Trump's administration with the reinstitution of the Mexico City policy, that contrast is such a gift in politics. And they will be giving us new gifts every single day. So what Marjorie doesn't understand is that what she is talking about as a political gift is an argument back and forth over the murder of innocent children. And her fake phony Mexico City policy and her fake phony Hyde Amendment that mean nothing, that have never stopped a single innocent child from being killed. It all comes down to just political hay now. Marjorie, what has happened to you? She says, quote, the Hyde Amendment, the Mexico City policy, these are hugely popular issues on the pro-life side. Yeah, right, Marjorie. Fundraising letters now don't even need to be drafted. Just updated, right? And sent to the collectively bamboozled evangelicals that you have been bilking for the better part of 40 years. Just shameful. Tony Perkins piped in. He agrees about the Senate. It's also the very pro-life. Not only are they pro-life, they're going to stand firm, says Tony Perkins, as they work to not stop a single innocent child from being killed. Who do we have here? Kristen Hawkins, president of the Students for Life. Some lives, you know, especially if they're under 20 weeks, maybe not so much, but if they're over 20 weeks, in some cases, we're Students for Life. That's what they should change the name of their organization. I know it's a little long, but she had a meeting last week with Mike Pence, so she gets invited to the important meetings. She put out a challenge to him, right? She put out a challenge to him to stand up and declare that an unborn child is a person with the right to life, and that life should be protected by the government. No, that's not what she said. She challenged him to defund Planned Parenthood. Yes, yes. Which, let me remind you, would not stop the murder of even one innocent child. But it would be a fundraising bonanza for Students for Life and Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council and other industry bigwigs like Marjorie Dannenfelser over at the Susan B. Anthony fundraising list and the National Right to Life Committee. But again, it wouldn't stop the murder of a single innocent person. So the March for Life, in my estimation, my opinion, has degenerated into just a yearly fundraising gathering operation and an opportunity for industry hacks to mislead children about the right to life. So those Catholic kids who the Indians were beating the drum and the black Hebrew Israelites were calling them all child molesters and all that. They think they're pro-life, even though they've now become comfortable with the killing of some innocent people. And that's a real shame. It's a real shame. And the leadership of the pro-life industry are in for a serious reckoning. I'll just leave it at that. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of the March for Life and their seemingly endless effort to do whatever it is they're trying to do. I don't know what they're trying to do anymore. It's not end abortion, that's for sure. But it all stems around the Supreme Court decision that we all are familiar with, 1973, I think it was, Roe versus Wade. Well, now listen to this. We've got a story from the Daily Caller. The Supreme Court has decided to allow President Trump to enforce his ban on transgendered soldiers. A Department of Justice spokeswoman named Carrie says, "We are pleased." Okay, that's wonderful, Carrie. If you'll remember, federal trial judges in California, Washington, D.C., and Washington State formerly had prohibited the president of the United States, they had prohibited the commander-in-chief from enforcing his ban on trannies in the military. So here's the thing, folks. How is it that a judge can stop the commander-in-chief from doing anything? How is that? Well, and especially something as sane as banning transgender delusional freaks from the military. Genuinely mentally ill, possibly deranged people should not be trained to handle firearms. And that's what transgendered people are. They're mentally ill, quite possibly dangerously mentally deranged, possibly. As we learned from the axe-wielding tranny earlier in the show. So how is it that a judge anywhere has to allow the commander-in-chief? How did that happen? Well, I'll explain it to you. A generation ago, a little longer maybe, depending on how you want to count a generation, while I was on the playground, playing with pebbles and rocks and other children. While we were on the playground, our parents and grandparents decided to give the Supreme Court the authority over life and death. The Supreme Court was given the ultimate authority. They were given the power to essentially legalize even murder if the court saw fit to do so. And it did. And it does. And so now, no other power is off the table for the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court holds the power of life and death, and that was given to them voluntarily by the people and by the other branches of the government. And so they are now, essentially, they now sit in the seat of God. And they declare their power over life and death. And that means that by default, they have power over the commander-in-chief and the military. So our republic was handed over to lawyers in a star chamber. It's like a science fiction horror movie, what has happened to our country. And so now the president has to go to the court with his hat in his hand to keep the trannies out of the military, and there's now an entire industry, a multi-billion-dollar industry built up around the Supreme Court's so-called legalization of the murder of innocent children, and there's the child-killing industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and then there's the pro-life industry, which is a multi-million dollar fundraising operation that doesn't prevent the killing of a single innocent person. And the Supreme Court rules. So there you have it. I guess that's not exactly an uplifting way to end the show, but we're out of time. So I'm going to let you go. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.